State Government, Finance and Policy and Elections Committee. Today being Tuesday, March 1st, 2022. So welcome everybody to the Senate hearing today. Glad to see all of you and to see you here in the room as well. Much appreciated. Just to let you all know, we did change the order. We're going to take the MPCA agenda item number 5. We're going to move that up, and Senator Coran, as a member of the committee, already here, so we're going to have him go after the MPCA. With that, I'll have Ms. Wilson go ahead and call the roll.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Present.
Senator Howe.
Present.
Senator Carlson.
Present.
Senator Clausen.
Present.
Senator Fateh.
Present.
Senator Curran.
Present.
Senator Pratt.
Present.
Senator Osmick.
Present.
A quorum is present.
A quorum is present. Thank you. All right, members, we're going to go ahead and receive a status update. And in particular, we've asked MPCA to do a clean car emissions rulemaking update. And we have a new commissioner. So welcome, you're a new face to the committee. Glad to have you here today. Commissioner Kessler, as the routine is, to go ahead, state your name for the audio record and your title. And for each of you who are with you today, in addition, again, if you would, when you speak the first time, state your name and your title. And if it is questionable as far as spelling for the audio record, go ahead and spell it as well. Those are Senate rules for testifying. So with that, Commissioner Kessler, I'll go ahead and have you start.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Kiffmeyer and members of the committee. For the record, I am Katrina Kessler, the new commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and with me today are Assistant Commissioner Craig McDonald and Climate Director Frank Kolash, and we appreciate the opportunity to be here to provide an update on the agency's clean cars standards.
Just before you get started, I'm going to say this, and hopefully, if you feel like you're talking too loud, it's just right for the rest of us.
Okay.
So you need to really, those microphones are quite a ways from, if you notice when I'm speaking up here and if I go away or come up close, right? And so we really want to hear what you have to say. So just lean into the microphone and it makes it a lot easier for everybody and the audio recording in particular. Sorry, Ms. Kessler, Commissioner, if you go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Kiffmeyer. Yeah, it is. Does seem a little loud, but appreciate the reminder. So again, thanks for the opportunity to be here. Initially, we want to emphasize that the Minnesota Clean Car Standards are part of a multi-pronged approach to reduce vehicle emissions and to meet the goals for the bipartisan Next Generation Energy Act. Accomplishing our shared goals requires build out of our EV charging infrastructure, accelerating and incentivizing EV sales in Minnesota, and better coordinating regional and national initiatives to expand EV charging opportunities. Meeting the goals requires public and private sectors to work together. Minnesota utilities, including Minnesota Power, Xcel Energy, and Great River Energy, have been leading the way with initiatives to help Minnesotans connect their EVs to renewable energy. Expanding EV charging opportunities allows Minnesota to leverage the strong work of our utility partners to reduce emissions from electric generation sector in Minnesota. EV technology is available and becoming more readily available each year. Giving Minnesota customers more accessibility to EVs will also help Minnesotans who choose an EV the opportunity to save money on transportation fuels. In November of 2021, the MPCA announced more than $2.1 million in grants for an innovative electric school bus pilot project. The project means that 8 new electric school buses will be available to serve Minnesota school districts in Faribault, St. Paul, Columbia Heights, Morris, Osseo, and Fergus Falls. Some of our newly funded buses have already begun transporting Minnesota students, with the rest expected to be in service by the fall of 2022. In addition to the 8 school buses, grantees receive funding for charging stations. With the new program, Minnesota is the first state in the Midwest to implement this type of pilot project that will gather data and information about buses' performance and reliability. Lessons learned from the pilot project will inform future electric bus purchases, and the project is funded by the VW settlement. Minnesota continues to build out its comprehensive EV charging corridor. As of today, there are more than 1,100 EV charging stations across the state. Most of the charging stations are located at convenient locations such as hotels, hospitals, parks, grocery stores like Hy-Vee, and convenience stores like Quick Trip. The current network is a mix of mostly private and some publicly financed chargers. Through EV, the state has funded 60 fast chargers to date, and using VW settlement, we are supplementing additional private and other public sector investments. In total, we've paid for 75 charging stations, so that's the 60 fast charging and 15 level 2 charging stations, and more than 3,600 miles of corridor, including 2,500 miles in greater Minnesota. In addition to the direct state investments, Minnesota, with leadership from the Minnesota Department of Transportation, is partnering with Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, and Indiana to coordinate EV charging and electrification, accelerate electrification. Lastly, we expect to receive $68 million in the next 5 years via the bipartisan infrastructure law to further build out our EV charging infrastructure. And I will note that our bonding request for this session includes $13 million that would serve as the match for those federal dollars. As more businesses look to shift their fleet from diesel to electric, the MPCA has also been providing grants with the VW settlement dollars to assist private entities in making the transition to EVs. Since 2018, the MPCA has helped 8 Minnesota businesses, including Panagold Baking in St. Cloud, Stolt Trucking in Becker, Taylor Trucking in Northfield, and Ron Transportation in Otsego, purchase 18 new trucks and delivery vehicles. I also want to highlight that the MPCA has worked with the Department of Employment and Economic Development on its $20 million proposal in this year's supplemental budget request to provide assistance to businesses to further transition their fleet. It would be a one-time fund to upgrade fleet vehicles and support the installation of charging for the vehicles. Our commitment to supporting the electrification of the transportation system is good for Minnesotans because it creates and supports high-paying jobs. Minnesota is home to 6 companies providing more than 3,300 EV manufacturing jobs. That includes Philip Temro in Eden Prairie that builds EV charging stations and EV battery heaters, Zeus Electric Chassis in White Bear Lake that is building the next generation of work trucks, Rosenbauer in Wyoming that has developed an all-electric fire truck, and Windings in New Ulm that builds electric transmissions for hybrids and propulsions for EVs. Minnesota's investments in electric vehicles and the adoption of the clean car standards will continue to support and grow EV businesses and create jobs. Shifting to the clean car standards, which, as a reminder, include 2 components. One, a requirement for auto manufacturers to continue producing cleaner, lower emitting, and more efficient vehicles and continue to deliver those models for sale in Minnesota. And 2, a requirement for auto manufacturers to sell electric vehicles that are available in 0 emission states here in Minnesota. Most manufacturers sell their vehicles, EV and non-EV, through dealers who in turn sell them to drivers due to state franchise laws. The one exception is that Tesla sells directly to consumers. The Clean Cars Minnesota standards applies to manufacturers and requires them to deliver for sale, which for most manufacturers is through a dealer. I will say that the Clean Cars standards do not require any individual dealer to have EVs on their lot, and the distribution of the EVs is through a relationship between the dealers and the manufacturers. The Clean Cars Minnesota standards is not making Minnesotans purchase a new EV. It's not outlined the internal combustion engine. It does not regulate tractors or combines or small engines like lawnmowers or chainsaws or boat motors or all-terrain vehicles. It is not taking away people's F-250s or Silverado trucks. It does not take away people's snowblowers and landscaping equipment. It simply gives Minnesotans more choices, supporting our EV businesses and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. As a reminder, the MPCA started the rulemaking process in October 2019. In addition to the agency's comprehensive outreach and engagement efforts to get feedback on the proposed rules, the MPCA appeared numerous times before House and Senate committees in 2020 and 2021. In May 2021, an administrative law judge concluded that the agency could move forward with its rule based on extensive, deliberate, and open process after many comments and filings by stakeholders. Minnesota's clean car standards were adopted July 26, 2021. The Federal Clean Air Act requires a two-year waiting period between adopting and implementing the clean car standards, which means there is considerable time built in for auto manufacturers to plan and prepare before the standards go into effect. The waiting period also gives manufacturers time to accumulate early action credits for sales in model year 2022 through 2024. The new rule will affect vehicles starting for sale with model year 2025, which will happen around January of 2024. There have been numerous questions about the agency's authority to adopt the clean car standards. The legislature granted the MPCA the authority to adopt standards to prevent, abate, control, and control air pollution, including from motor vehicles. Greenhouse gases, including carbon dioxide and nitrous oxide, are defined as air pollution. During the Clean Cars rulemaking process, the administrative law judge also confirmed that we have the authority to adopt the rule and that we were reasonable in adopting the rule to reduce greenhouse gases and expand EV access in Minnesota. The MPCA has used and will continue to use its rulemaking authority very judiciously. It's also important to remember that Minnesota is not doing this alone. 16 states have adopted zero emission car standards. New Mexico and Pennsylvania are in the process of adopting these standards. In addition to the clean car states leading the way for greater EV adoption, all major vehicle manufacturers have made significant EV announcements in 2021 and 2022. For example, the Rivian pickup is now being delivered to customers in the US. Tesla is building a second factory to build EVs in the US. Hyundai has announced multiple EV and plug-in hybrid EV offerings. The VW family is selling the VW, Audi, and Porsche EVs in the US. Stellantis, the company that owns Dodge, Jeep, and Chrysler, has made announcements for EV options, including delivery vans for Amazon. General Motors has announced the EV Hummer and EV Silverado badges. Kia, Nissan, Subaru, and Mazda have made EV model announcements, and Toyota has announced that they are moving to EV offerings in the coming years. Having the clean car standards in Minnesota will ensure that Minnesota customers have early access to these new model choices coming to the market this year and in the coming years. Lastly, I want to note that in response to conversations with manufacturers and comments received during the rulemaking process, the implementation of the clean car standards includes an early action credit program that allows manufacturers to earn credits for electric vehicles in plug-in hybrids delivered for sale in Minnesota starting in model year 2022. Manufacturers can accrue credits to build a credit bank during the period before the rule kicks in January of 2024. Credits can be used to meet their compliance requirements in the model year 2025 and beyond. The early action credits also give manufacturers an incentive to make EV models available to Minnesotans who want to purchase an EV vehicle before model year 2025. Thank you again for the opportunity to provide the update. I want to reiterate that the Minnesota Clean Car Standards were adopted through a transparent process with robust public engagement and affirmed by the administrative law judge, that they are responsive to what we are hearing from Minnesotans across the state, which is people want more access to EVs. And finally, that the standards are a critical component of our multifaceted approach to reduce greenhouse gases and to meet our shared emissions goals. So, Chair Kiffmeyer, we are happy to answer any questions you and the committee may have.
Thank you, Commissioner Kessler. We do have a lot of questions, so maybe we'll just go right to that. Probably one of the biggest thing is the status right now of the California waiver. That makes a difference to us. So can you give a status of what the California waiver would be?
Chair Kiffmeyer, thanks for the question. I'm going to ask Assistant Commissioner McDonald to answer that question.
Mr. McDonald, I'm glad you could be here. If you state your name for the audio record and your title.
Chair, my name is Craig McDonald, and that's spelled M-C-D-O-N-N-E-L-L, and my title is Assistant Commissioner for Climate and Air Policy. To your question, we expect EPA to reinstate the waiver here in the coming weeks. The Biden-Harris administration has directed EPA to reconsider the waiver. They did so in January of 2021 via an executive order, and EPA has proposed to reinstate the waiver in April of 2021 and took comment on that action. So we've heard directly from EPA leaders that the waiver reinstatement is imminent, and Minnesota is not the only state waiting for this waiver. I think, as the committee is well aware, the other 177 states, the 16 that Commissioner Kessler mentioned, are also waiting for this waiver. And of critical importance is the compliance deadline here is for model year 2025, so there's no compliance obligation until that year, which is calendar year 2024.
Thank you very much, Mr. McDonald. Another question, though. Now, how does the rule interact? So we have a rule that's going to interact with the new federal corporate average fuel. Okay, that's called the CAFE. I think we've heard of the CAFE before, their standards. So how does that rule interact with those new federal corporate average fuel economy standards, CAFE? Mr. McDonald?
Chair Kiffmeyer, so in December 2021, the EPA finalized new greenhouse gas emission vehicle standards for light-duty vehicles for model years 2023 through 2026. Minnesota is currently under the federal standards until model year 2025, which is when the Clean Cars Rule will go into effect. For model year 2025, the new federal standards and the Clean Car Standards are the same for greenhouse gas emissions, so they will be harmonized at that point.
Chair Kiffmeyer.
Yes, Commissioner.
I think that Director Kolesh has one thing to add.
Right, go ahead. And again, first time, name and title for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Kiffmeyer. My name is Frank Kolesh, last name spelled K-O-H-L-A-S-C-H. I'm Climate Director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I just wanted to add directly to your question about the CAFE standards. Those are adopted at the federal level by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and they are separate from the fuel emission standards that are adopted either by EPA or in the alternative by the 177 states. So those are two separate rules, and in December of 2021, the federal agency responsible for the CAFE standards revoked their preemption claim that was part of the previous revocation of California's waiver under the Energy Policy and Conservation Act, so that those two rules are separate as that they were prior to 2019.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that information. I think the big thing is I think the questions that we have concerned is all that interaction and justification for even aligning yourself with California had to do with that. But I just want to go ahead, and we have a lot of questions from members, so I'll just want to keep moving. So Minnesota adopted the California rules as amended, but California is now in the processing of updating its low emission vehicle, LEV, and zero emission vehicle ZEV standards. So how is that going to affect Minnesota's rule?
Chair Kiffmeyer, thank you for the question. Yes, you are right, and we are aware that California is working on new vehicle emission standards. Action by California does not automatically impact Minnesota nor the other 16 states that have gone ahead and adopted the alternative fuel emission standards. Any changes in Minnesota would have to undergo a new rulemaking and a new process, and that wouldn't occur until we have reached a point where we've actually implemented the standards and decided that something else needs to happen. So that's years away at this point.
Okay. Well, we have other questions from members, and Senator Coran, I know you had indicated you're interested in asking a question, so if you want to go ahead, this is a good
thing. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's been reported that California is planning to match the new federal CAFE standards. If that's the case, why are we following California?
Mr. Kobach?
Madam Chair and Senator Coran, we started the Clean Cars Minnesota rulemaking for the vehicle emission standards in 2019 at the point where the federal government had proposed and was moving forward with weakening the vehicle emission standards. And we adopted those prior to EPA establishing the new federal standards for those model years, as Assistant Commissioner McDonald mentioned. So where we're looking at, and reiterating what Commissioner Kessler had mentioned, we are not automatically tied into the next round of California low emission vehicle or zero emission vehicle standards. We will see what they come up with for those standards and then make a decision on what's best for Minnesota based on what we understand California is going for, but also what the federal government is going for. And we understand that the EPA and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration are looking at the post-model year 2026 vehicle emission standards and CAFE standards. And I want to make sure that we're clear that the low emission vehicle standards and zero emission vehicle standards are separate and distinct from the CAFE standards that NHTSA adopts under the Energy Policy and Conservation Act. So when we see what California makes a final decision on for their rule, and when we see what the federal EPA has decided for their rules on vehicle emissions, we'll make decisions on which direction Minnesota should go.
Senator.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, so you can understand the concerns that our residents would have in the impact of these when we're following California. But so if we're doing this, you know, and we have California zero emission standards, and they're changing the zero emission standard to ban the sale of gas powered vehicles 2035, does that mean the agency supports the ban? And I think the previous statements have been, well, we'll wait and see what they do in many cases, and then we'll act. Does the agency have intentions of acting on that particular rule?
Commissioner Kessler.
Chair Kiffmeyer and Senator Coran, thanks for the question. We have no intention at this time to take any additional action. As has stated, we're going to wait and see what the outcome of the ongoing work at the federal level and in California is.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Coran. I'm a bit puzzled then, because earlier you have to realize that if you do the California one, California is changing to ban the sale of gas-powered vehicles. So if you've aligned your standards and rules with them, how can you say you're just not going to do that, Commissioner?
Senator, Chair Kiffmeyer, thanks for the question. I believe what we've heard is that by the time the Clean Cars Minnesota rule kicks in 2025, we will be aligned with the federal standards. So at that point, we can make a decision as to whether or not we want to stay on that path, which is the path that is laid out in the Clean Cars Minnesota standards, or go through another rulemaking process and adopt other standards.
Well, Commissioner, when you say other standards, I believe the choice is either federal standards or California. So if you're going to do other, what would other be if not California? Commissioner.
yes, Chair Kiffmeyer, you are correct that the current choice is the California standard or the federal standard. I believe Assistant Commissioner McDonald would like to add something.
Assistant Commissioner.
Chair Kiffmeyer, and one thing to note, as we had mentioned, was the California update would need to require that affirmative action. So in order for Minnesota to make a decision, the default decision is to follow the federal regulations.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we understand that. Next, I would like to have a question is, if we don't have this resolved by 2026, what do you do, Commissioner?
Senator Kiffmeyer, thank you for the question. My understanding is that our rules will be in effect January of 2025 for the model year of 2020, or January 2024 for the model year of 2025. And at that point, our path that is laid out through the Clean Cars Minnesota is aligned with where the federal government will be at that moment.
Okay. What seems to be a little uncertainty here, and that's extremely difficult for people that are looking to plan, as many of these do. With that, I'm going to go next, Senator Howe.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess my question is, you know, when we asked whether you're going to follow the California standards, it sounds like it depends on what they do. You're going to wait and see what it does. And the question is does it, depending upon what they do, how does that, is that a minor change to our standard, or do we just adopt new standards? How does that work?
Commissioner Kessler.
Chair Kiffmeyer and Senator Howe, thanks for the question. A departure from the standards that were adopted through rulemaking, so adoption of new standards that are different than the federal standards, would require new rulemaking. So it is not a minor change. It would be a full-blown rulemaking process with all of the public engagement that is required and the transparency, as well as the statement of need and reasonableness and the economic analysis associated with that.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So who determines and how is that determined what's minor and what's major? Does every change require an overhaul of the entire rulemaking process, or are there minor changes that are done? And what defines that?
Mr. Kobach.
Chair Kiffmeyer, Senator Howe, the primary piece is, if we were to adopt California's new standards, that would that would be a major new rulemaking, and there's not really a necessity to use the word major rulemaking. That would just be a new rulemaking that we have to do, because we would have to adopt and identify the specific chapters in California standards that we were adopting into Minnesota if we chose to go that route once California is done with their rulemaking. And if we chose not to act, then we would become under the federal standards at that point going forward. And that, so we're looking to see what California does, but also what federal EPA does. And so that would just be a rulemaking process that we would have to do. There, the language of adoption by reference does include if California makes minor changes to definitions in the rule, then those are picked up by the reference, but that is only in their existing standards. If they change the standards and adopt new standards for model year 2026 and beyond, we would have to conduct an entirely new rulemaking under Minnesota's Administrative Procedures Act to incorporate and adopt those standards.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and I'm just trying to figure this out in my head, is so if they do a definition change to, let's say that, you know, if they're going to go to zero and it's going to eliminate all gas-powered lawn equipment, and that definition is just a definition change, is that a minor change then, and that would affect, you could just pick that up as a minor change and affect not being able to use gas-powered lawn equipment?
Commissioner or Mr. Kobach?
Madam Kiffmeyer, Madam Chair, and Senator Howe, that issue would present a novel instance for us. California has never done that before. They have those standards for those other kinds of engines and other parts of their rules that we have not adopted. We are only have only adopted the rules that deal with light duty vehicles in California's rules. So it is, if they were to make such a change, we would have to look to see whether or not we think that that change is incorporated by reference or if we need to do something different if California would make such a change. But they have not done that in the past, and they have different parts of their rules that deal with those kinds of engines.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but now I'm even more... So they could make that change, is what you're telling me, which if they changed the definition to include that, that could affect us here. Correct? Is that not what we just said?
Mr. Kobach.
Chair Kiffmeyer, Senator Howe, in a very unlikely event that California would do that, which there's no reason that they would do that, they have those rules for other engines and other parts of their rule. That would only be in a hypothetical sense that we would have to determine whether or not that implicates us to make some other decision. But what we know now with the California's next round of rulemaking, that will be an entirely new rulemaking by California of a new section that deals with their light duty vehicles. And they have never made a definitional change to bring their light duty vehicles to cover other kinds of engines. Their rules are separate for all of those different engines.
So,
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if that, you know, if they do change a definition that has an impact, what recourse do stakeholders in Minnesota have to oppose or to voice their opinion on that?
Commissioner.
Chair Kiffmeyer and Senator Howe, I think the situation you're describing is highly unlikely. And I mean, if that were to occur, I think we would have to determine if we would need to make a change to our rule and go through another rulemaking process.
Senator Howe.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So it would be your decision, not the legislature's, not the stakeholders' decision. It would be your decision whether you had to go through rulemaking or not. Is that what I understand?
Commissioner Kessler.
Chair Kiffmeyer and Senator Howe, we would make that decision and go through a public process.
Thank you. I'm a little bit puzzled here, though, by your responses here. This is interesting because we adopted, as you testified here, the California rules. We adopted them. And we would default to those standards, not the federal standards. So I'm a little bit uncertain as to how you are testifying here today at previous actions clearly align us with California standards. Now you're saying that MPCA has minor, major, we may or we may not. Are we aligned with the California standards or not? Commissioner Kessler.
Senator Kiffmeyer, Chair Kiffmeyer, I just want to clarify that we adopted the Clean Cars Minnesota standards along the zero vehicle emission standards, the same standards that California has and the other 16 states have. In 2026, the standards we adopted are lining up with the federal government. If California decides to adopt something else, we would need to proactively go through rulemaking and adopt either what California has. And if we did nothing, we would default under the federal standards. So we are not fated to California.
Well, Commissioner, there is no alignment with the feds for zero emission, all right? They have low LEV, but the feds don't have that for zero emissions. Can you clarify that, Commissioner, or Mr. McDonald?
Madam Chair, you are correct. The federal government does not have a zero emission vehicle standard. So the emission standards we're talking about being harmonized are the low emission vehicle standard. But the point remains that when California promulgates a new rule, it will create a new chapter and a whole new set of standards that Minnesota will have to make a decision whether or not to follow that or to revert to the federal standard and lose the ZEV standard that we currently enjoy.
Well, it seems to me that you've really got a an interesting situation, but you're going to basically only be abiding by California for a year, and then go back to the Fed standards. Why even align with California? Why didn't you just choose to do the federal standards to begin with? That was your choice. It seems like you're going, putting people through a lot of confusion and a lot of issues, a lot of things to deal with, that you could have just gone to the federal standards, Commissioner.
Chair Kiffmeyer, thank you for the question. As I noted, we had heard from people who are interested in more access to EVs and recognize that this action of adopting the zero emission and the low emission fuel standards or vehicle emission standards are consistently moving us in the direction of the next generation energy goals. And at the time we started the action, it wasn't clear that the federal government was going to adopt the lower emissions vehicle standards.
Okay. Next on the list here is Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. California has a separate rule to regulate emissions for heavy-duty trucks and will require them to eventually be all electric. Could you use your authority that you cited under 116.07 to adopt the California's heavy-duty truck emission standards?
Commissioner Kessler.
Chair Kiffmeyer and Senator Pratt, any additional change to Minnesota's vehicle emission standards would require an additional rulemaking. So if that was something that we decided that was appropriate for the state, we could go through a process of a rulemaking to do that. We are not planning to do that at this point.
Well, Commissioner Senator Pratt, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So why would you do it for cars and not trucks?
Commissioner Kessler.
Chair Kiffmeyer, my understanding is that the vehicles covered by the Minnesota Clean Car Standards represent 50% of the, more than 50% of the greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota. And so given our goals around vehicle emissions reductions, we decided that this was the right action for Minnesota.
Senator Pratt.
I'm not quite sure I got an answer to my question, and that is why be inconsistent? It sounds like California's already adopted the rule. We're aligning with the California standards, but we're not aligning with the California standards, as I've heard the discussion going around. I'm just trying to figure out how do you align or not align, and then come back to the feds if the feds don't have this. This is all very confusing. It feels like we're getting inconsistent answers along the way. Do you have the authority to do it for trucks?
Commissioner Kessler.
Chair Kiffmeyer, we do have the authority, but we have not decided to exercise that authority for trucks.
All right, Senator Pratt, I understand that. The question I think too, though, then, is from our constituents a great deal. Could the agency use the authority already referenced 116.07 to adopt California's rule banning the use of gas-powered lawn equipment? Do you have that authority? That's the big thing. The question here is, do you and the MPCA feel that you do have the authority at this stage, if you wanted to go ahead and ban the use of gas-powered lawn equipment? Commissioner.
Chair Kiffmeyer, thanks for the question. Yes, we do have the authority, but similar to the previous question, we have no intent to take that action.
Okay. I appreciate that, Commissioner, but there's an awful lot of intent. We'll decide, we'll see, we'll wait. In the meantime, all of our manufacturers, dealers, and so on are being placed in a great deal of uncertainty. And I think that's particularly important to us right now, but we're trying to help to understand what the real intention of MPCA is in regards to rulemaking, which seemed to be so absolute, aligning ourselves with California. Nevertheless, I have next on my list, Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't necessarily have a question at this point. I guess I would like to ask one about how this standard works. I mean, my read and my experience on this has been that dealerships are going to have to stock these vehicles regardless of whether they believe that they will sell or not. I've asked this question before to previous folks, your predecessor. When the government tells them that they have to sell these and they don't sell them, and the new model year comes in, and you have to sell them at a discount price or get them off your lot because dealerships have bought these vehicles. You know, the way dealerships work is they buy vehicles, they put them on the lot, and then they sell them. When these don't sell, because I don't believe as much as you may believe that people want these, some do, some don't, but when they don't sell, what's the government remedy? Because there's not a fund that they can go to be compensated for the fact that the government, not the private sector, not the market demand, the government has come in and said, you will sell these. And when they don't sell and they take a loss, which I believe, you know, I believe that's going to happen, where do they go to become whole, Commissioner?
Commissioner Kessler.
Chair Kiffmeyer and Senator Osmek, thanks for the question. I just want to clarify that the rule applies to the manufacturers, and you are right. We have the same understanding that manufacturers work with the dealers. The manufacturers and the dealers can decide where they want to stock these vehicles in the state of Minnesota. It doesn't require any individual dealer to have EVs on their lot. And the one thing that I will say about supply and demand is that we have not heard from any of the other states who have adopted these standards that there is a problem selling the vehicles.
Senator Osmek.
Well, Commissioner, you're not following the laws of what actually happens in the marketplace. You're saying that the dealerships and the manufacturers will all get together and hold hands and figure out places to do these. The reality of how the dealership system works in states and in Minnesota in particular is the manufacturer sells the car to the dealership. They transfer the title. So the dealer now owns that piece of equipment. And the return policy doesn't work. You're saying that they can move them around. They can certainly put them through auto sales programs. I mean, they could take it to the auto dealer's auction and do those types of things. But the bottom line, Commissioner, is that these vehicles, when they don't sell, are going to be liabilities on the books of dealerships. To say that they're going to work together, great. That's not the reality of the situation, Commissioner. Somebody is going to be left holding the bag. And my question was, and you may not have an answer to it, is where do they go to become whole when they begin losing money and as a result have to increase prices on other vehicles to make up for the loss? That's the reality of the marketplace. That's the reality of the auto dealer system that we have in this state. It's a cold, hard fact. And I've asked this question before, and your predecessor didn't answer it, and I don't think you have an answer for it either. This is government-induced forcing a product that the marketplace isn't necessarily asking for. If these were so wildly successful, believe me, auto dealers want to make a buck, and they want to have them on their lot. But us forcing a square peg into a round hole means we're somewhat culpable in creating this situation where they can be either losing money or jacking up the prices of every other vehicle on the lot, inflicting financial damage on anybody else who buys a vehicle. So I think you need to think... The folks in the administration, and you in particular, need to think very hard about how the system works and the direct impact that this is going to have to all Minnesotans, regardless of what vehicle they purchase. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Osmick. Senator Osmick, if I recall right also, that the current mandate in other states has been reported to us is about 2 to 3%. In 2024, it jumps to 7% mandate, and under the new California rule, which Minnesota is aligned with, that would be 26%. So what Senator Osmick is talking about is real and substantial and has a very potentially negative effect in regards to our folks here in Minnesota who are currently aligned with the California rule. So Commissioner Kessler, would you like to respond to that? Commissioner.
Chair Kiffmeyer, I'm going to ask one of my colleagues to respond. I don't know all those numbers off the top of my head.
Mr. Kobach.
Chair Kiffmeyer, to your point, I want to clarify that that 26% number that you cited with California has not been adopted by California at this time. The standards, the clean car standards, the zero emission vehicle standards that Minnesota adopted go to the 7% number. And that's the number that we are targeting for model year 2025 and beyond, understanding that California is in a process of making those changes, but they have not adopted those changes yet, and we have also not adopted anything beyond what California's new changes would be. So the 26% is only what California has talked about. They have not adopted those, and therefore we have not adopted those.
Thank you, Mr. Kolash. All right, Senator Howe, and then I'll go to you, Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to make clear, I think what you said is that the federal standard is going where we kind of want to go anyway. Why don't we just adhere to the federal standard? Why don't we just go there instead of the California standard now? I mean, you didn't expect the federal standard to go there. The federal standard looks like it's going there. Why don't we just stay with the federal standard instead of continuing to adopt the California standard?
Commissioner Kessler.
Chair Kiffmeyer, I'm going to ask Assistant Commissioner McDonald to respond to that question.
Assistant Commissioner, right?
Yes.
Assistant Commissioner McDonald.
Chair Kiffmeyer and Senator Howe, thank you for the question. So as we testified earlier, there is no federal zero emission vehicle standard, and we've heard from Minnesotans all across the state that they want access to these vehicles. And we know the marketplace is going there. I think vehicle manufacturers have invested something on the order of $250 billion in this technology to ensure that more models are being developed. We also know that we're seeing increasing sales for electric vehicles and plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, both nationally and in Minnesota. So the zero emission vehicle standard really helps Minnesotans get access to those vehicles, because as Mr. Kolash said, those vehicles are going to the clean car states first. And furthermore, those clean car states represent almost 40% of the market. So by Minnesota following these standards, we're able to help push the market, ensure Minnesotans have access to the vehicles they want, and also see real climate benefits and environmental benefits.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Senator.
One follow-up, and then I'm done.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. What I'm looking at right now is I'm concerned, have you worked with the Department of Transportation, and I would like to set up a meeting with you also, because if we continue to go down this road, we need to figure out how to maintain our roadways. And as this transitions over, there is not a good method, and I'm working on a bill to try to figure out, before all these EV chargers go in, we have to identify how we're going to collect revenue to maintain our roads and bridges. And currently right now, if they pay $75, which some people think is adequate, I firmly believe is inadequate to continue to maintain our road network. So I believe that they need to pay a going rate of the fuel tax, because electricity is being used as the fuel now. And I believe we have to do something to collect that. And currently there is no method to do that, and we've got a bill we're working with the utilities on. We'd like your input prior to you establishing all of these charging stations. It is behooves us to be on the front side of this than the back side of this. And the question I would have is, have you talked to the Department of Transportation or anyone else? Are you working on that to try and close that loop?
Commissioner.
Senator, or Chair Kiffmeyer and Senator Howe, thanks for the question. And yes, we are working closely with the Department of Transportation. We understand this concern, and we would be happy to review the language and to work with you separately.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. I'll next go to Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the conversation today. I really think that the clean car standards are part of the continuing evolving changes in transportation. We weren't around when the first automobile appeared, but I wonder if some of the same conversations were taking place. You know, are these new vehicles, are they really going to be popular? Are people going to really purchase these? Well, we're going to have to build roads and bridges for them to go on. How are we going to finance that? And maybe the bigger question, someone said, if we don't make the change, what are we going to do with all the manure that's building up in our streets and in our backyards? So I see this as an evolving system. And right now, we need to find solutions, obviously. We're facing some issues with climate change that we know is being contributed to because of our automobile engines, and we need to find standards. We need to find solutions. Technology is there. You know, a lot of the questions we're talking about, I think, will be answered as we evolve into electrical vehicles. I think also that we're seeing manufacturers are responding to market trends. We're seeing all of this kind of evolving. So these are good discussions we've had, but again, I see this as an evolving process. It's one that started many, many years ago when the first automobile appeared, and we're gonna find solutions. We always have, using technology, using creativity. So again, I appreciate the conversation today, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Senator Claussen. I think it's interesting as well, that kind of conversation, but the difference here is there's a difference between evolving and letting the market pulls you along, and we're seeing that happen. But in this particular case, we're seeing government mandating, government pushing, government requiring, government using subsidies, and so that's a big difference, though. And that's what's happening here, is that pushing and that mandating that is going on here. Senator Carlson, you're next. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess one of the things that I'm puzzled about is maybe the fear of going to the next stage here. And I think Senator Claussen said it very well when we talked about moving from horses to automobiles. You know, when we're talking about what could happen in 2024 or later, that's kind of like worrying about what we're going to have for breakfast 2 years from now. And I don't think that's really very realistic. Also, the fact is that the public is pushing this. The public is buying these vehicles. The public is demanding that we adopt some policies that will allow manufacturers to promote those vehicles in Minnesota. And when we talk about, I'll have to say that when we talk about lawn equipment, that's something that the public is pushing now. I would challenge you to go look at leaf blowers and snow blowers now, and you're going to find that the electric ones are usually sold out. And as far as the electric vehicles, the EVs now, electric vehicles are in high demand. And what I'd like to ask the commissioner or the other testifiers there is, what vehicles today are being, let's say, restricted from not coming to Minnesota? And maybe especially the new electric pickup truck from Ford. I think they've had a restriction that they can't take orders in Minnesota, because as the capacity grows to make these vehicles, they're adding more and more states. So there's some of those that can't even be brought to Minnesota. And I'm looking at this as being very similar to when we decided to go to compact fluorescent bulbs, or maybe even LED lights. And there was a resistance in trying to hold on to incandescent bulbs. And you know, we all know now that incandescent bulbs are something that isn't even used in Christmas time. So I'm looking at the pressure coming from the market. The market, I think, is pressuring. And I'm wondering if you have any comments on those vehicles that we can't get right now that people want.
Commissioner Kessler.
Chair Kiffmeyer and Senator Carlson, thanks for the question. You're right, we are hearing similar things that people across Minnesota are interested in buying these vehicles and are frustrated because they cannot find the vehicles. The reality is that the vast majority of EVs are only for sale in the states by which have adopted the clean car zero emission vehicle standards. And so we're hopeful that during this 2-year period before it takes effect that the early adoption credit program will incentivize some dealers to bring the models to our state earlier so that people will be able to buy those vehicles and we won't have such an imbalance in the supply and demand.
Thank you, Commissioner Kessler. I'd just like to mention, though, Senator Carlson, when you talk about that breakfast 2 years from now, maybe you aren't worrying about it, but you know who is preparing for it? The farmers. And the farmers drive gas-powered vehicles. And they are the ones who are now ordering seed. They're doing things that is going to make it possible to have your breakfast in 2 years. And it's a good deal. And by the way, in regards to the CFLs that had mercury in them, they were mandated. They're going to outlaw incandescent. And the market actually said, no, let's go to LEDs. If the government had kept their fingers out of that, the market would have gone to LEDs, which are being adopted and are finding to be efficient and effective and doing well. Meantime, I came across a CFL, ancient one, giant, huge thing. And so I should probably donate it to the Historical Society for some record that they might like to have of one of these antique CFLs that the government mandated at one time. Truly, when the market does go that direction, the market itself will often sort out that which works, that which doesn't, and is able to discard them before that, and the government mandate isn't necessary. With that, I'm going to, next on my list, I have Senator Pratt.
Madam Chair, I do have a follow-up question.
You have a follow-up question, Senator Carlson?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Do that before I go to Senator Pratt.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's exactly what I said, is that the market is what's pushing this. The market pushed us towards CFLs because they would save 25% on electric bills. And I don't like particularly the CFLs because I think they don't have the life that people were advertising. But LEDs are, that was the market that pushed us there. The market was pushing us to go to LEDs for lighting in the home, lighting in vehicles, lighting on the streets, everything like that, because it saves 85% of the cost of electricity. So it's the market that is going to push us into electric vehicles also. And I think what the commissioner is saying is that's the market speaking today. The market is pushing us towards this. And what we need to do is get a jump on these standards so that the market is satisfied with these standards, regardless of the people that don't seem to see the wisdom of them as far as climate change and as far as operations, that sort of thing. And what we're seeing too is that when people use electric vehicles, they become, I don't want to use the term strongly, but they become evangelists on electric vehicles. We even have a lot of industry that is switching to them. And I tend to think that nobody in farms are going to be forced to go to gas powered vehicles, but the truckers, miners even are pushing for electric fleets now. So this is something we have to recognize, and I think that market or those markets are going to push us into it faster than probably we want to.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. By the way, I'd just like to clarify, I've been informed, though, that the Ford F-150 electric vehicle, they are able to be sold right now here, and the dealers are taking orders for Minnesota consumers. So the statement that they're not available isn't quite accurate. So I just want to be sure that anybody listening out there knows you want an F-150. It's there for you. Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to kind of react to a couple of the items that have been brought up here, because I think you touched on it just now, that you can
put an order in for a Tesla. You can put an order in for an F-150. This isn't a shortage of EVs being inaccessible. This is, I mean, all vehicles right now are backlogged. With the supply chain that the administration has created, we've got a backlog on all of our vehicle products, whether they're gas or not. Senator Carlson, I thought you actually made my point for me very well. I've been up to the mines. I've seen those electric steam shovels, those electric dozers hauling out taconite from the mines up north. They did that without a mandate. They did that without being forced. There was a good business case for it, right? It made sense for them. And what I'm fearing is you know, every student in Economics 101 understands that you have to have demand and supply be in equilibrium. And that if we have the demand for these products, then there'll be a supply there. Now, I chair the Jobs Committee, and one of the things I'm really afraid of is that the average vehicle, CNBC reported 2 months ago, the average vehicle purchase price is $10,000 higher than the average vehicle, gas-powered vehicle. And my fear is that by making this change, we are going to price out low and middle-income families from being able to have the freedom to buy a car and to travel throughout the state and throughout the country. And we're going to make it harder for them to get to and from their jobs and support their families. That's what I'm fearing. This isn't about whether or not, we should be doing the right thing for the climate. We don't need, I think what you're hearing is the concern that we don't need a government policy to make these EVs available. We don't need to incent demand, because quite honestly, the demand's already out there. That's happening. The reason CFLs failed is because they were awful light bulbs, right? And LEDs came in and they knocked them out of the market, and they would have knocked out incandescent probably as well had we not monkeyed with the demand and supply curve. Keynes has been talking about this. Adam Smith has been talking about this for centuries. Why do we think that we can do this better now when every other time we've tried to monkey with that supply and demand equilibrium, we failed? And Commissioner, I guess maybe that's ultimately the question. This isn't about market or not market. This is about simple, pure economics, because Senator Osmick's exactly right. You bring in these cars at a higher price point, fewer people can afford them, fewer cars are sold, dealerships go out of business, people are unemployed. In the meantime, we can't get average and low and middle income families to and from work. Help me understand why this is a good idea.
Commissioner Kessler.
Chair Kiffmeyer and Senator Pratt, thanks for the points that you've made. I think we share the goals of making sure that we have affordable transportation options that align with the state's climate goals. I think nobody is interested in pricing out people. I think that's not what we're doing. We are following the lead of other states where the supply and demand has worked out when they've implemented these standards. And it is difficult right now to get any vehicle. I mean, we're all seeing the same thing. It's good to know that the truck is available in Minnesota. I think historically, when you've gone to some of those websites and asked whether or not you could buy a Hyundai Kona in Minnesota, it would say only available in these states. And it's nice to see that evolution is occurring, and that's what we've seen occur in other states.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner, it just seems to me that we could avoid a lot of bad unintended consequences, if we just allowed that supply and demand to catch up and do it naturally versus trying to force it. Because I'm afraid you're going to put people out of work. What I think I hear you saying with transportation options is that you're trying to force people off the roads and into transit. And I think that's unfair to those low and middle income people. One of the reasons we are the most prosperous country in the world is because we have transportation options. And you can afford to buy a car. You can afford to travel. You can afford to get to work. We saw the greatest economic boom in the 1950s when cars became more affordable and more accessible. And there was no mandate. There was no mandate. There was no forcing of the government to do that. So that's the concern I have, is you are creating inequities with this. And if you were able to wait a couple of years, you would hit your goals more naturally rather than causing bad unintended consequences. And there's not a question there. It's just a real concern. I disagree with your folks that say we have to pass this to get vehicles in the state of Minnesota to be sold, to be accessible, because people are ordering them today. They're ordering them today. So, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. I think that is an excellent point, one my district makes frequently. Why is the government mandating and pushing and hurting my family's ability? Senator Osmek, you're
next.
Thank
you, Madam Chair, and I'll be very brief because we have some more work to get done. I really appreciate the fact that the folks on the other side of the aisle have used the term market over and over and over again, and they know that the market will react to a product that's popular. That's great. Then why are we even having this discussion? If the market is already serving, if the market is already adjusting, if the market is already bringing new products to market, why? Because people want them. Great. So why then do you have to have a government-induced mandate? It boggles the mind. It's as if you're talking one side of your mouth, free market, and the other side of the mouth is government intervention at the same time. It's amazing. We heard in transportation from car dealerships the impacts that this is going to have. We don't have them here today, but on behalf of them, I want to tell you this has a significant impact, not just on new car sales, but on used car sales, because all prices will go up because there will not be a government fund where you can go to be made whole by the government's choice. That's what this is a government choice to enforce their thoughts onto the free market. So they're going to raise prices. And that single mother of three who can only afford a cheap used car is going to pay more, not less, more as a result of this government intervention into the private market. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Osmek. I want to go one more moment. Senator Carlson, is it a question? Is it a comment? You've made a couple already, so I'll give you about 1 minute to just briefly, we have another bill to get to.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess I want to have some equal time with the people that have made other comments, and I need to
Senator Carlson, we don't have equal time here. Please
Madam Chair, make your comment, Senator Carlson. Some of the false comments that have been made. When Senator Pratt says we didn't have mandates in the 50s, we certainly did. We had seatbelts, we had glass, we had tires, we had positive crankcase ventilation, we had catalytic converters. We constantly have mandates that come from the government. So that is a false flag. And I think what we need to do is we need to stop putting out this disinformation about California, about the standards. Now, this particular
Madam Chair.
Committee has jurisdiction.
Senator Pratt, just
Madam
a moment,
Chair,
Senator Carlson. I'll come back to you, Senator Carlson.
Just a point of order. Look, I talked about mandating the purchase of cars. I didn't talk about any other safety features, and Senator Carlson is distorting my point and impugning my intentions, and I think it's distasteful.
Senator Carlson, would you like to try again?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Pratt did say that there were no mandates in the 50s when we had all of this great boom in economy, and that's not true.
I think Senator Pratt has spoken for himself, and let's let him do that. Would you like to make your comment?
Okay, yeah, my comment is that we have had mandates on auto vehicles for years. We have had them every year. There's something new that comes up. We now have backup cameras that have to be on. We have sounds for electric cars that have to be installed in cars. There are mandates that come all the time, constant mandates, and they come from either the government or they come from the market that wants them put onto these cars, or they come from other safety standards. So it's just not true that we don't have mandates that are put onto cars that actually do often increase the cost of the vehicles. So that's one point. There's others too, but I think this particular committee is really concerned over rulemaking. That's under its authority and jurisdiction, and I think we've had that answered.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. One last question that I have for you, Commissioner, though, I think is a really important one. This has to do with your agency's general authority in regards to rulemaking. So because of that general rulemaking, you can effectively adopt by reference any California air quality rules. Is that correct? This is about authority. Do you have authority to do the California rules in any area whatsoever? Do you have that authority, Commissioner?
Chair Kiffmeyer, we have rulemaking authority to regulate air pollution. If we were going to adopt any new standards for vehicle emissions or other air pollution, we would have to go through a new rulemaking process.
Okay, but Commissioner, I'm going to clarify again. It is the position of the MPCA that they don't need to come to the legislature for that, that under their general rulemaking authority, if you decided that that's what you wanted to do, you would use your general rulemaking authority to do so without the legislature. Is that correct, Commissioner?
Chair Kiffmeyer, we have the authority that the legislature gave us. We would have to go through a rulemaking to demonstrate reasonableness as a part of that process.
So basically what I'm understanding here, though, in fact, this is in fact, that there would really be no limit to what the MPCA could do through rulemaking authority. Commissioner.
Chair Kiffmeyer, part of the rulemaking authority that was granted to the MPCA requires that we go through the process and we have to demonstrate reasonableness in front of an administrative law judge and go through a process that involves robust public participation. So to say we could do whatever we wanted, it would have to be reasonable and affirmed by an administrative law judge.
Thank you, Commissioner Kessler. We've seen that process. So at this point, I have no other members for questions or comments on my list. And so we'll conclude. Thank you very much, Commissioner Kessler, Assistant Commissioner McDonald, Mr. Kolash as well. Thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we're going to go to the next item on our agenda, which is Senate File 3333, Senator Coran. When you're ready, Senator Coran, you can just go ahead and do the motions for your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move Senate File 3333.
And just as a reminder, just to be sure, do you have an amendment?
Madam Chair, I do have an amendment.
It's an author's amendment, correct?
It is an author's amendment. I'd like to move the A1 amendment to the Senate File 3333.
All those in favor of the author's amendment, the A1, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and is adopted. Senator Coran, to your bill as amended, and my understanding here, by the way, on that A1 amendment for the benefit of those watching today is that you added an effective date with the A1 amendment. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair. It just changed the effective date following the final enactment.
Okay, Senator Coran, then you can go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 3333, what it does is it simply prohibits counties, municipalities, and school districts from accepting contributions from any form from a nonprofit or for-profit organization made for the purpose of paying election-related expenses related to local and or federal elections. In other words, what this does is it bans what we saw emerge in the last election cycle, Zuckerbucks, from being used in local elections to execute and influence any sort of election activity. What this bill does is a really common sense bill. It ensures that no outside money is used, which is imperative keeping our elections fair and transparent and accessible as possible. This bill itself, I think there's, in the last election, we'd seen an entity or two with significant resources piled into a variety of cities and counties across the country. This works against the campaign finance laws are very clear, and what this does is it closes this window if those entities want to utilize
and try to influence money. So we have a campaign finance regulatory process to do so. It's shocking that so many cities allowed this undue influence in their election process to try and affect outcomes. This bill is a sensible way to remove this undue influence and continue to make sure that our elections are fair, accessible, and trustworthy. Madam Chair, that's all I have.
Thank you, Senator Curran. Appreciate that. Senator Curran, are there other states who have passed such legislation?
Yes, Madam Chair. I think to date we have some 14 different states that have passed legislation banning this activity since the last election cycle. Just for your reference, Madam Chair, in Minnesota alone, one organization put a little over $7 million into the election process in Minnesota. Those dollars were used in Minneapolis, hard to believe, but $2.2 million, Hennepin County, $1 million, Ramsey County, $2.7 million, Dakota County, $613,000, and a variety of other cities that took advantage of a $5,000 grant. Over $7 million, and this particular activity is clearly a direct and partisan activity operating outside of the campaign finance laws.
Thank you, Senator Curran. Senator Curran, there's a lot of information in regards to what's been happening in this. There's the Center for Tech and Civic Life, CTCL, gave grants to more than 2,500 jurisdictions in at least 48 states. Chicago-based Center for Tech and Civic Life, 28 Minnesota cities and counties received grants. The history of this entity, Center for Tech and Civic Life, founded in 2021. Senator Curran, this is a really new entity, and I'm unfamiliar with it. Could you tell me more about what this Center for Tech and Civic Life
Madam Chair, when you look at this, I think the activities are the I think that it's been named Zuckerbucks. It's one of the large nonprofits that did emerge for this very purpose of influencing elections. Those dollars were created, and I think it was over $400 million spent nationwide. Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, Priscilla Kahn, they shipped it to local governments. I think when you see the breadth and the depth, it was amazing. Our neighbors just across to the east, I think they had, in a variety of cities, that organization literally took over the election process in lieu of government. You know, the government's role is to make sure that election process is fair and trustworthy, and these types of activities operating outside of the election law process as it stood today, that's why we're here today, is to close that loophole. That undue influence should not be put forth on our voters.
Thank you, Senator Curran. I think that this is a very important issue to be sure that when elections are being funded and being processed and do all that, it's under the control of our own local units of government and our own Secretary of State office. And so that kind of consideration is important right now, and that we make sure that undue influence from outside entities that get inside an actual government office, which seems to be the pattern lately as well, and that we work on doing that. So, Senator Curran, members, any other questions? Or I do have Senator Carlson on my list and Senator Claussen. So Senator Carlson and then Senator Claussen. Senator Carlson, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions, but the first one is just a wonderment here, Senator Curran. How do we deal with the, let's say, the situation where a school or a church will allow polls to be in their location? Is that considered a donation? Is that considered anything other than just a mandate that they open up their facility for the election? And by the way, I'm with you on this. I want to make sure that we do have things as carefully overseen as possible.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, I believe all of those instances are defined in our state law and state statutes of where an eligible election may occur. And the campaign finance laws also define how and when you can contribute to the influence of an election process. This particular entity, one thing that's shocking, that's why I do believe that this is a real bipartisan issue that that cities and counties would willingly give up that type of control to an outside entity, not to participate or make a contribution, but in Wisconsin, they delivered $9 million and virtually let them take over the election process inside our government. I don't think anybody would agree that that type of activity should ever occur.
Thank you, Senator Curran. Senator Carlson?
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I agree with Senator Curran on that. Now, Senator Curran, can you tell me how these locations actually received the money? Was that something that was a grant, and how did they get the grant?
Madam
Senator
Chair?
Curran?
Madam Chair, yes, Senator Carlson, it was set up as a grant, and I think I have the stated goals are kind of amazing of this entity, of how they want to really assist and make one elections amazing and wonderful and guidance of their stated goals in this process sound wonderful. You and I would probably agree with every one of them. The process is a grant, and that's why, again, why it's kind of shocking that so many cities and counties would apply for it. But when you look at the actual implementation, 90% of those dollars went towards one particular party leaning, and that's not a fair and bipartisan manner in which we would want elections or influence. And in this case, it's clearly operating outside of operating within a loophole, which I think we should close to make sure this doesn't happen ever again.
Thank you, Senator Curran. I was just wondering, are these structured organizations such as the Center for Tech and Civic Life, what's their corporate structure, 501c3 then, or?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Well, it's been reported to me that they also have an arm that's New Organizing Institute. That one's a 501c4, generally described as dark money type of nonprofit that can be partisan.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I think the goal with everybody, we'd like to get the dark money out that would and make sure that all influential dollars follow the campaign finance laws so it's transparent to all involved.
Senator Carlson, I think you still have your hand up, so do you have another?
Yes, and I guess that's interesting to me. And, you know, I went onto the website to find out where these grants went, and I guess I was a little bit surprised. And I'm wondering if Senator Curran has spoken to the places that got them in his district and what they did with them, and if they had partisan influences. And from what I understand, Center City has gotten a grant, and Madam Chair, in your district, St. Michael has gotten a grant. And is that something that you have spoken to them, and have they told you why they got that grant and also what they spent it on?
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Senator Carlson.
Senator Curran, hold on a minute here. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In our county, or I'm sorry, in Center City, they did apply for it. If you look at the composition and the makeup of that city and those that would likely apply for it, they meet that goal. Do I believe they used it in a partisan manner? That's yet to be determined, and there's activities or work looking to the election results in that area. We've had great success in Center City, me personally. But we haven't seen any of that. But when you look at overall, that's a small, I think the grants were $5,000 or less, or $5,000 is a minimum grant. And there's dozens and dozens of those grantees in that small category. But the largest dollars were spent to really be influential in some of those key targeted states in the 2020 election cycle. Center City probably wouldn't rise to that that targeted level for anyone. They just happened to take the grant. So we have to stop this undue influence.
Senator Curran, regards to this, Senator Carlson, the issue before us here at this time is should they in the future? So what was done in the past, which was new, novel, outside money coming in a significant way through this process. Many times the largest amounts of money went to Hennepin County, our larger, more different political persuasion. And so sprinkling some around through the other places in small quantities, while $2.9 million goes to one of the largest counties. So but the issue before us here, Senator Carlson, is should this continue? And whether it's cities in my area, Senator Curran would agree that none of these should be taking this outside money to conduct elections. They are able to be involved in the electoral process through their nonprofits, absolutely. Nobody's restricting to that. What we're saying, though, is that within the government setup, where you have the official functions going on, through this bill, that would not be allowed. And I don't care where that is, but it shouldn't be allowed anywhere. So this is principle of the thing, that we fund our elections through our official government structures, and that the entities like this who would like to get inside those government structures, that they need to keep their activities outside in the public realm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I like I mentioned, I do agree with Senator Curran, and I thank him for bringing this out. And I thank you for having this discussion, because whether it's in the past or whether it's present or what we should do in the future, it's important to know exactly what happened and why it happened, how it was used, and should we stop it. We have nothing to do with Wisconsin. This is Minnesota that we're talking about. And I want to make sure that we keep Minnesota elections as clean, as squeaky clean as possible, because we've got a lot of time and effort spent in questioning Minnesota elections. And this is one thing that just kind of adds to that questioning. And so I appreciate Senator Curran bringing this to the forefront.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. And just to be clear, Minnesota recipients of these CTCL grants total nearly $3 million, went to Minneapolis, 2.29, Hennepin County, another million, Ramsey County, 2.7. So the total, $7.3 million, we are looking here at $6 million of that total went to Minneapolis, Hennepin County, and Ramsey County. So because the Wisconsin example was stated here, but there are others as well. But again,
Madam Chair,
for its future looking forward, Senator Curran.
Yeah, and to add to that, I think the difference in the reference to Wisconsin is been far more interest in how those dollars were used. And so there's a variety of organizations actually investigating it and looking into how it was used. So they could verify that staff were deployed in those cities. We've been, because of the lack of transparency, we've been unable to determine how the significant dollars, the majority of it in the four major counties, how it was used.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Curran. And also the information provided to us was some of this money was used in some jurisdictions, and we have yet to track down exactly how or where, but the log has been buying or renting vehicles, creating a get-out-the-vote rap video, monitoring Facebook posting, just a whole variety of things. So the big thing is elections should be run in Minnesota with government-funded resources, with government staff, and that outside money, whether it is the NRA or is the CTCL, they should leave their electioneering to outside of that official government process. So with that, members, we have
I have one more question and one simple comment.
Okay.
The question is, do we have a feel for how the amount given?
Senator Carlson, you're not on my list. I'm going to Senator Claussen. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. Would Senator Curran feel differently if he could restrict how those funds may be used? For instance, we know that local governments spend a considerable amount of money running elections. If you could use those in a restrictive manner, let's say, for instance, voting machines is the only thing they could be used for, would you feel differently about your bill if you could actually restrict the use of those funds?
Senator Curran. Madam Chair, Senator Claussen, no. I think the process that we have defined between our state statute and state law today and campaign finance rules dictate, I don't want an undue influence on a deemed nonprofit regardless of their nonprofit status or private entity making those contributions.
Thank you, Senator Cran. Thank you, Senator Clausen. Senator Carlson, you've got your hand up.
Yes, Madam Chair. I have one, just a small comment and question that
Senator Carlson, we are at the end of our committee time. You have exactly 1 minute, and then it's done.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Cran, I'm just wondering if you have had any investigation as to how these grants were monetized. How did they decide how much money they wanted? That's number one. And then the other question is that we have a big list here of localities that have requested money. So they are looking for more election funding. And I think that's up to our committee to fulfill those wants. Those are local wants that they have articulated somehow, either by applying for these grants or getting money from somewhere. And so that's kind of a want that we should be fulfilling. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. And just to remind you, all committee members, this committee has been very generous to local governments in equipment in a variety of ways, and their local entities as well. So, but since there's so much interest in this particular bill, we're going to lay this over for another committee hearing.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And with that, members, having concluded the business today, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.